going to Camp Blood, ain't ya? Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I'm at it again, folks. I've gone rogue, because here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. And usually, I do that by reviewing Kung Fu, Ninja, Samurai, flicks, and other forms of martial art media. But every once in a while, honestly, I kind of like to break my own rules and expand, talk about some other films. And I've done that quite a bit already this month. But I'm doing it again, because today is Friday the 13th. Again, we just had one of those last month. But this time, I'm here to review the namesake, the creator of one of the greatest slasher villains of all time, Friday the 13th, Part 1, starring people. There are people in this movie, including Kevin Bacon. This is like his fourth movie. Kevin Bacon is in this movie. Also, Harry Crosby, which is a kind of a weird name to say out loud, Harry Crosby, but he's one of Bing Crosby's kids. So outside of that, there are people in this movie. This is the movie they're most known for, but you do get really little Kevin Bacon in this movie, which is fun. It's fun to see little tiny Kevin Bacon. Love Kevin Bacon. Is there anybody who doesn't like Kevin Bacon? I just had that thought. Kevin Bacon's one of those people that we can all universally agree upon, right? Now, like I said, last month we had a Friday the 13th because that's how the calendar works for February and March, because February has a weird amount of days in it that I still don't quite understand why they only have 28 and we couldn't just take two of the other months that have 31 days and give it to February. I still don't know why that's a thing, but whatever. But because of how many days February has, March ends up having the exact same order of days. So we had a Friday the 13th last month, which took place right before Valentine's Day. So I sat down to review My Bloody Valentine 3D. Ooh. Today is the Friday the 13th, technically right before St. Patrick's Day. And for a moment, I will be honest, for a moment, I did consider doing one of the Leprechaun films. I've never seen any of the Leprechaun films. I know Jennifer Aniston, that's like the big thing. It's like it's her first movie, or really early on in her career, she did the original Leprechaun. And I think whatever the ridiculous title is, Leprechaun in the Hood or whatever, like, I think that one is supposed to be one of the iconic, like, it's so bad, it's good films. And I considered it for a moment because this is a martial art themed podcast, the idea of then doing a little bit of this, like, okay, so like how would I fight as a martial artist? How would I fight a leprechaun? That thought did cross my mind of like, well, that would be a fun conversation for sure. But I have no interest in those movies. I have zero interest in the Leprechaun franchise. It really may be, I'm trying to think, it's like that and the Human Centipede movies for completely different reasons that I have zero interest in watching either of them. I don't care for the aesthetic. I've seen like clips for Leprechaun, the Leprechaun films, and I just do not care for that aesthetic at all. Plus, leprechauns are an endangered species because they're a mythical creature, and so the idea of trying to think how would I beat up a leprechaun just also seems a little cruel. Fun, but cruel. Shout out to Hornswoggle. Now, don't worry. If everything works out, you will be getting a St. Patrick's Day themed episode here on the show next week. Maybe you can guess what movie I'm going to talk about. Hint, it's not Boondock Saints. I'm going to wait for that one. I'm going to savor on that one. No, there's another movie I have in mind for St. Patrick's Day. One I'm very excited to do because I've never seen it before. But instead, just going to play it simple, play it safe. And today, going to be talking about one of the most iconic horror movies and one of the most iconic horror movie franchises, Friday the 13th, Part 1. Now, if you haven't seen this movie, spoilers ahead for a 46-year-old, 46? Yeah, I think so. 46-year-old film. Maybe I'll do my best true crime podcast, because it when I was going over this ahead of time, I was like, oh, this kind of sounds like a true crime podcast situation. A child in 1957 attends Camp Crystal Lake, but due to negligence from the camp staff, allegedly fornicating on their own time, making love, as one staff member would say, this child drowned. A year later, again at Camp Crystal Lake, those same camp counselors are murdered. After a subsequent fire, the camp is shut down until 1980, when the previous owner's son decides to reopen the camp. June 13th, Friday, June 13th. That's the best I can do. Hopefully that gave you a little bit of a true crime pod experience. So yeah, basically after that point, a bunch of random teens show up at this camp to work at it for the summer and all get murdered, except for one. That's basically the movie. It's very straightforward. And this film ended up, obviously, inspired an entire film series, 10, I think it's 10 films in total, 11, okay, here we go. So it's 10 of the original series, 11 if you count the Freddy vs. Jason film, and 12 if you count the 2009 reboot. So ironically, they're waiting on number 13, which there has been a lot of ownership rights court cases going on with like the original group of people, including Sean Cunningham, for who like actually owns the intellectual property for Friday the 13th. And I think that's part of the reason why anything new has been so stalled out. And I think it's also the reason why the streaming rights for these movies are all over the place. I'm actually going to talk about the whole series here in a moment, because it's Friday the 13th. You might want to watch any of them because they get progressively sillier, but also kind of more action-packed at the same time. It also seems like circling in developmental hell right now. Peacock has ordered a prequel series called Crystal Lake that is supposed to be produced by A24. So it's going to look really good. And I can't think of her name right now, but she played Daphne. Yeah, she played... No, Velma. She played Velma in the live-action Scooby-Doo films. Linda something? I got to look it up. Hold on. Linda Cardellini. That's her name. I got the Linda part right. I'm surprised by that. But Linda Cardellini has been cast to play Mrs. Voorhees for the series, which is going to be fun. I can definitely picture her doing it. Honestly, I can picture her being Mrs. Voorhees. I think that would be a lot of fun. So when it comes to horror movies, I don't mind gore. I love the Evil Dead films. I love Sam Raimi, and he's not shy to just dumping buckets of blood on things for no apparent reason. And it actually kind of makes me chuckle a little bit, if I'm being honest. It's just a little silly. But I also don't mind, ironically, also describes the original Evil Dead film. I also don't mind horror movies that are more show than tell. That are more, you don't really see the actual scary thing that is attacking people, but instead you get to see the people respond to being attacked. There's something about that also is like, I find that very enjoyable. I don't necessarily need to see the killer all the time. And what's really cool about the original Friday the 13th movie is that it kind of does both. Anytime any of the counselors are killed throughout this movie, you get a POV perspective from the killer. You So you just get to see the camp counselors respond to being stalked and attacked. That is until the reveal of the killer at the end of the movie, and you get the final showdown between her and the final between the killer and the final girl, Alice. At the same time, though, the kills in this movie are brutal. And they do this really cool thing, because as I was watching it last night, getting ready for this episode, I was like, why is this so intense and visceral, even though the kills are fairly mild until the final kill? You know, you get like axe to the head, you get spike through the neck, you get a throat being slit, just some like more standard kills, not the ridiculous things that Jason is going to be known for doing later on in the franchise. Simpler, more mundane kind of kills. And I realized, I think part of what makes Friday the 13th Part 1's kills so engaging is not just because you get to see the reaction of the person being attacked, but it lingers. It lingers for a moment. It doesn't overstay its welcome, but the shot lingers for a moment on the person being killed. I think that is best shown with the first 1980s camp counselor who gets killed. She gets her throat slit, and it's not like cut gush. You know, I think that's how it like works a lot of times in movies in general, especially modern movies. It's like cut across the neck, gush, dead. You know, instead you see cut slowly starts to come out, and you just kind of see her freak out and then slowly like go. And I think that, and it's slow, but not like slow motion. It's slow, like almost more like real time. And as opposed to maybe what we're used to with movies where it's like, and the person is dead. You get that a lot with a lot of the kills. It may not be that slow kind of like neck cut in real time, but the shot kind of lingers for a moment on the person. Now, if you haven't seen the movie and you somehow have managed to live your life in 2026, all the way to 2026 without knowing the big reveal, I did let it slip a little bit as I was talking about the kills. So here you go, folks. You do know that Jason Voorhees isn't the killer in this movie, right? Originally, Friday the 13th was supposed to be conceptually, it was supposed to be an anthology series where each film was going to take place on the day, Friday the 13th, but feature different characters, different situations, different kinds of horror as well. But due to the financial success of Friday the 13th, Part 1, the studio is basically like, okay, you're going to do more of these, right? Like, we're just going to stay with this Camp Crystal Lake thing, right? And they did. Kudos to them for including a bit of a cliffhanger reason as to why they could come back to Camp Crystal Lake and somehow continue to manage to find ways to keep coming back to Jason Voorhees, who does become the actual main killer here in the second film, Part 2, and remains the killer throughout the series. But no, it's not Jason in this first movie. Jason is the little boy who drowns, presumably. And it's his mom, Mrs. Voorhees, who murdered the camp counselors in 58 and is now murdering the camp counselors here in the 80s, trying to prevent the reopening of the camp. And it's not just like she's just so disgruntled about the fact that, not disgruntled, heartbroken, more than disgruntled. She is just so heartbroken over the fact that her son died that now she's making sure that nobody can get back to the camp, which is a noble enough, it's noble. That makes her a bit more like vigilante-like in a way. Instead, she has gone insane. Basically, you have a reverse Psycho situation where Norman Bates was like not only still believed and acted like his mother was still alive, but also acted like his mother. There are moments, and this is the part where I think Linda Cardellini is going to be really good at this if they get to this point in the Crystal Lake series, where Mrs. Voorhees in the movie is talking to Jason, but she is also doing the voice of Jason and talking back and forth to him as one person. And those shots of her doing the killer, killer, mommy, killer as Jason Voorhees, I think Linda is going to do really well at in the Crystal Lake film or Crystal Lake series. So, what is the best way then to fight Mrs. Voorhees? I guess I'll have to do something related to Jason another time because I have to talk about fighting an old woman now. So, what is the best way to fight Mrs. Voorhees? Well, just like in My Bloody Valentine 3D, conventional weapons don't really seem to work, but a frying pan sure did. There's a scene where she just gets walloped over the head with a frying pan, and that worked just like in My Bloody Valentine 3D, where they literally blew the guy up and it did nothing, but instead a mop and frozen food worked really well. I'm going to start keeping track of this more when I'm watching horror movies. How many times, especially with slashers, are common household items just more effective than actual conventional weapons? Which is a good way to segue back into the conversation of like why training with traditional martial art weapons actually is kind of beneficial, because even though you might not have some of those kinds of weapons like easily at your disposal, the skills that you learn from it can very easily be translated into common household items, which is a good way to have not first line way for self-defense, but is a tool you can have to defend yourself in the case of maybe not a old lady attacking you, but you know, a home invasion type of situation. Also, the big lesson here is machetes. Get a machete. Since Friday the 13th wasn't intended to be like this one big cinematic universe, but instead like this anthology series, they have to work out more of the lore as it goes. Like I said, Jason's not the killer here. He shows up in the second one, and you don't get hockey mask Jason until part three. Another thing is the machete. They build out the lore here. So again, if you haven't seen it, the final kill is Alice takes off Mrs. Voorhees' head with a machete. In part two, Jason is wounded with a machete. And it's not until part three and forwards that the machete then becomes Jason's most iconic weapon. Obviously, part of the, I think, appeal of Jason is the fact that he is the most versatile, which is professional way to put it. He's the most versatile with his kills. He's doing things all over the place. He's not just like a one weapon kind of person. He's using all kinds of different things, even the most unconventional of ideas, which I think makes him a pretty versatile opponent if you were to eventually throw down with him. But that being said, the most iconic weapon is, of course, the machete. So it's kind of cool how they took the weapon that killed his mother, the weapon that wounded him, then becomes his primary tool. And there's something about that that I do find to be really like, it's not that deep, but it is a well-written piece to the story arc. It killed his mother, it wounded him, and now he has become attached to it. I think that's really good writing. There's also something interesting about, you know, it is a camp on a lake, so obviously it's a body of water. And usually water is symbolic of like rebirth and all these kind of, you know, being born again, these kinds of like symbols. And the big plot twist at the end of the movie, which may honestly be one of the greatest jump scares in horror movie history, is Alice is just floating down the lake in a canoe. She eventually wakes up and she sees some police officers off in the distance investigating, and she's trying to get their attention when from out of nowhere, Jason, presumably Jason Voorhees, all deformed and looking like the creature from the Black Lagoon, Jason jumps out, pulls her under the water. She then wakes up in a hospital and is informed by police that everyone has been killed. She asks about the boy who pulled her under, who she is immediately putting two and two together, that is Jason Voorhees. And the cops have no idea who she is talking about because they did not find anyone else at the lake scene where she was floating in the water. So I think that's really cool. Again, how intentional it is, I don't know. But I think it is kind of cool where water is usually used as a symbol of life, rebirth, being born again, all these kinds of things, that here it's, that is basically still going on, but in a perverted sense. They pervert the metaphor in a way, because apparently, allegedly, and I know this gets worked out further in the rest of the movies, I'm just trying to stay here at this point in this one. Apparently, Jason has been living in and around Camp Crystal Lake this entire time. He did not die, and he has become deformed, but still remains alive. He was, in a sense, born again, but he was brought back to life in a way, and he's going to be brought back to life in more than one way in the future. He was brought back to life here by the waters of Camp Crystal Lake that should have killed him in the first place. Like the Phoenix. I know I'm like making this way deeper than it needs to be, but I don't want to get too crazy into this. But I did think it was interesting. We're starting to run out of time here today, so let's do a few quick wrap-up things here. So how would you fight a crazy woman, like a crazy old lady like Mrs. Voorhees, with a frying pan and a promo code for BetterHelp? A lot could be avoided here if we just would have in the past take mental health concerns more seriously and got people the help that they need. We need trauma experts out on the field helping people. Everybody should be getting therapy. And I know that's not the really cool kick-ass answer that you wanted. So again, machetes. Everyone should also have a machete. But the answer is quite obvious here. Everybody just needs to get some help. Go talk to somebody. Get some therapy. And like I said, maybe in the future I'll circle back to more Jason madness, so that way it can be, you disarm him and get the machete, and you know, you can get the silly stuff. But seriously, in this one, for what is really a very straightforward, simple, just people getting butchered kind of movie, it really is kind of a deeper answer of, man, if she just would have gotten help and was taken care of after her son presumably drowned, but apparently didn't. So also, maybe if people would have done their jobs of actually just done their jobs, period, then, you know, we wouldn't be in this situation right now. Best scene of the whole movie is not any of the kills. It's not any of the brief nudity. It is the moment you are introduced to the new owner of the camp. He comes on screen, and he is standing there. He's chopping wood, shirtless, in jorts. And that will be my official look this summer. Every day, I will be shirtless, in jorts, chopping wood. He's got a red bandana tied around his neck. Let me just clarify something. They're not like jorts in the conventional kind of way like John Cena, but it's it's like ripped off jeans that he's wearing, and it's 1980, And so we still have the 70s influence, so they are quite short. It's a hell yeah brother moment. It's a yeah. Yeah, kind of. It's the best scene in the whole movie. He is just standing there chopping wood, shirtless in jorts. It is something that we can all try to do this summer. Lastly, so I wanted to make sure that we all got to this point. Would I watch this movie again? Yeah, obviously. Would I buy a physical media copy of this? Well, like I said, the streaming rights for these movies, they bounce around all over the place. And I do like Friday the 13th a lot. I've come to realize that this is the series that has way too many sequels, and I don't care. They're all kind of fun in their own ridiculous way. So, with it being Friday the 13th, if you want to go watch one of these movies just for your own personal fun today to help celebrate our spooky day, here's the breakdown, at least as of the recording, of where all the movies are. So, part 1 through 3, including, this is where I watched it, part 1 through 3 is on Peacock. Part 4 through 8 is on Pluto and Paramount Plus. Jason Goes to Hell is only available buy or rent. Jason X is on Tubi. Freddy vs. Jason and the 2009 remake are both also buy or rent options only. So if you have Peacock, Pluto, Paramount Plus, and Tubi, you could actually get through the bulk of the series. Even if you just had Pluto or Paramount Plus, you could actually get through. It's a lot of the additional silly sequels, but you could get through quite a bit of the franchise if you had just Paramount Plus or Pluto. Sorry about the other three, though, that are only buy or rent options. I don't know how many people are demanding to be able to watch those three, though. I'm sure there's like nostalgic love for some people with those. Freddy vs. Jason, that might be a good one to do here on the show at some point, too. I've thought about doing Alien the awful Alien vs. Predator films, too, because it's cinematic showdowns. Anyway, let's wrap this up. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Happy Friday the 13th. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend. And check out the other great shows here on the And Is Out Podcast Network, like Systematic Geekology, Why I Don't Like Page and Pixel, and my sister show, My Seminary Life, which is in the middle right now of a Lent-themed series called Fish Fridays, doing song reviews each week, talking about songs to help us move through the Lent season. You can follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. And you can check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one literal slice at a time.